Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to kick off the second hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. In the second hour, we are going to be focusing pretty much exclusively on the precious metals sector, and even more so on some of the stocks that we follow on the site, and also touching on that M&A transaction between Monarch Gold and Yamana. First and foremost, though, to get this second hour off to a roaring start, I'm chatting with Richard Postma, a.k.a. Doc. Doc, let's focus on some of the broader moves when it comes to precious metals, and I want to start with the GDX chart, because GDX had a very good Thursday, moved aggressively higher. Friday, kind of a mixed bag, but I think the most important thing was it didn't give up a lot of those gains that it had on Thursday. Give us your general assessment of the stability, the strength of GDX right now, please.
Well, Corey, I think gold pulls back again. I don't think gold's quite ready to break out yet. And I feel that at the end of the year or into possibly January is the best chance for gold to break out. And so that tells me that GDX probably had a nice little run, but I wouldn't be surprised if we start to fall back again here, back into its trading range again for a while. And I expect that to happen through most of November into December, but that's when I will get interested in starting to purchase some more gold and silver positions, probably as we get close to December.
So, Doc, to me, the close that we're seeing on GDX is quite significant. It is breaking that downtrend line that has been in place ever since that peak in early August, and it got ahead or above that recent lower high of 41.34 that occurred in the middle of October. Is this not a significant move because of how GDX closed the week and the breaking of that downtrend?
Yeah, but I look at the weekly chart and the Bollinger Bands are starting to narrow toward the price. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we, even next week, probably hang up here a little bit. But then I think really we start to pull back a little bit and we trade in a training range for a while. What's good about that is that's going to give the weekly, the 200-week moving average time to move up over time to pricing. And that's when I would get a little bit more excited, frankly, because when you look at the MACD on the weekly chart, it still puts GDX in a vulnerable position, especially for next week, it looks like. Could be that it may not, but I think we have to get down toward neutral on the GDX, on the MACD on the weekly before I think we should get too excited here.
Okay. So in terms of a trading range, though, do you think that low from 2 weeks ago on GDX, the low of 36.01, is that a pretty solid floor? Is that the bottom of the trading range?
Yes, I believe it is for the time being. And we're not going to see that for a while, I think. And if we do later on, it could be we might move a little bit lower, but I don't see it getting much below that, actually, Corey. I think that we're in a really good position here, and it's only a matter of time. And I think we actually break out to challenge the highs sometime in 2021. But that's okay with me, because if it waits that long, I think it's going to be a more significant move at that point in time.
Okay, so continuing to have a correction more in terms of time, not so much in terms of price right now. Are you concerned at all about any selling that comes at the end of the year, usually termed tax loss selling? A lot of people are sitting on some gains, though, you have to imagine. But if they bought in the last 3 months, the shares have drifted. Do you worry about any weakness just at the end of the year due to shuffling for tax purposes?
Yeah, we could get a little bit, but I don't see a lot of that this year, frankly. And if you look at the monthly chart, we're in a really good place with the precious metals and with gold. And we will probably finish this month over the closing position in November on the monthly chart. But then I think December we might waffle around, but I would get more excited as we get into the new year. We could break a little higher in December, but I don't see a massive break up here right now, Corey.
So then when it comes to, let's say, the gold price, is this 1850 or 1851 level that some have said looks like a double bottom? I don't particularly see that as a true double bottom, but do you think that's a floor for the gold price?
Yes, I do for the time being. I think we could go a tad lower, but not significantly. I don't think we would go... In the worst case scenario, I don't think we go below 1800. I know some people have talked about that, but I don't see us going much below 1800 at all. And I think we could still be in a trading range for some time as we move into the latter part of this year and into next year. But that would be really extremely healthy for this market. The longer we stay in it, because when we get the next break, it should be significant. And I think these precious metal stocks will really benefit. But you're going to have to be patient, I believe. I believe that it's going to be a little bit while longer before we break higher.
How about silver? Silver has stayed true to its word of being more volatile than gold. It's sold off a bit more than gold, but this week had a good week. It's up almost 7%. Just this week had another move on Thursday of over a dollar higher. How do you see silver playing out?
I think silver is in the same position as gold, is that we are in a broad trading range here, and I think it continues for... quite a while, I don't see silver even getting close to its previous highs by the end of the year. I think it is going to have to be 2021. We talked about that way back in August, where I felt that we wouldn't see these precious metals attacking their highs until the end of the year or 2021. Now, looking at the charts, I wouldn't be surprised if it's 2021 now.
Now, Doc, what about how the U.S. dollar is playing into all of this? The U.S. dollar had a bad week, and it's trending very close to one of the more significant lows of 91.75 on the dollar index that happened in September. If that breaks, there's a fair bit of air underneath that chart. How do you see the dollar moving?
I think the dollar short term will reverse back up. And then I think we trade a little bit sideways, and that corresponds to my position on gold. I think we trade a little bit to the side. And then I think 2021, we have a real good chance of the dollar breaking down again and starting to search for new lows. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if we move down a little bit in the dollar in December either. And that could continue a little bit in January and February. So that'll be positive for gold, but I don't see a big breakdown suddenly in the dollar here. But the odds are we do move a little bit lower yet in December and possibly into January before the dollar has any potential of moving back up. But I'll tell you one thing, I don't see the dollar suddenly reversing and moving up here anytime soon.
No, you're not seeing any strength for the dollar. Hey, even though Europe is continuing to be weak, you think that this is, it sounds like, going to be more of a range-bound trade in this lower part of the range?
Oh, yes, definitely. And if we're going to get a breakdown, it's going to have to be a significant breakdown. It's going to have to be 2021. But I do believe December, we have a potential of hanging in here or even breaking down a little bit more, but not a significant drop.
Okay. So, Doc, big picture with your assessment of the precious metals, maybe still having a little bit of a more range-bound trade. I don't want to say weakness, but more of a range-bound trade, not breaking out to new highs or even breaking some of the recent highs. How does that mean that you're playing the underlying stocks? Understanding that I know you like a lot of these juniors, and these juniors are very news-driven. There should be a lot of news on tap. So how are you investing?
Well, I haven't been buying much lately because I think that We have a pullback short term here again in gold pretty soon. But I'm going to get interested after that pullback, because I think at that point in time on a lot of the charts, it looks like we're moving toward the 200-day moving averages on these things. And I'm going to start to take further positions in some of the ones I like toward the end of the year and probably into the early part of next year. So I'll start increasing my positions because I like the way the market looks and the weakness we've had in a lot of these stocks. And I think we're getting pretty close to their lows.
Okay, Doc, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you for kicking off the second hour of the weekend edition. Again, the second hour is going to be focused exclusively on the precious metals. I hope all of you enjoyed that first hour and now leading into the second hour. Thanks for your time, Doc. Look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome back. Continuing on with the second hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report, and the second hour focused on the resource sector. And I am chatting with Dave Erfley, founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. Now, Dave, this is the second time we're chatting this week because I wanted to have you on the show to outline an M&A, or at least proposed M&A transaction between Monarch Gold and Yamana. So the deal is Yamana will acquire the Wasamac property and the Camflow property and mill through the acquisition of Monarch. Total consideration right around $200 million Canadian, or about 63 cents per share of Monarch. Now, there's a couple other nuances to this deal where there is going to be a SpinCo, where the company, Monarch, will then have the Beaufort mine, the Mackenzie Break property, and actually a couple more other properties in the SpinCo. We'll also have $14 million cash. Take us through your initial thoughts of this proposed M&A.
Sure, Corey. Fortunately, I got into the stock in April, and my subscribers that followed my lead were up over 200% after the deal was announced. So we can't really grouse too much, but I feel that that project is worth a lot more, and so does the market. I mean, if you look at past takeovers, they're averaging about $90 an ounce, and this has been sold for $40 an ounce. Granted, I mean, you get a share, you get some of Yamana, which is good, and you get all the other projects spun out, and I really like all their other projects, plus $14 million cash. So I really like that aspect of it, but I'm hoping for a bidding war, because you've got three majors that own stock in Monarch, and they've said that only 28% of shareholders have approved the deal already, and that 28% includes management and includes Yamana, which is a little less than half that. So if you look at Alamos Gold, they own 16%. And if I'm Alamos and I see what it's been sold for and I own 16%, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they put in a bid. You know, if you take a look at a similar situation in Cardinal Resources, an Australian company in Ghana, there's a bidding war going on over there. And those shareholders are just sitting back and enjoying the stock continuing to climb. I mean, the first bid was at 66 cents and now it's up to a dollar. So I'm not saying that's going to happen here. But if you take a look at Wasamac, it's in a top tier jurisdiction. It's a really good deal for Yamana, but I think the project is worth more.
Okay, so maybe a bidding war. That would bring at least some excitement into the sector for an M&A transaction, because quite frankly, some of the recent M&A that we have seen has been more so disappointing to the market. But your outline there of what value this is placing on the project, $40 an ounce in the ground versus what we have seen, $90 an ounce in the ground. If this deal does go through, does that mean we need to take a step back and revalue a lot of projects, a lot of companies that have known resources?
Exactly. That's what I'm concerned about. You know, I own shares in a few other companies that are takeover candidates, and I'm worried about a re-rate, you know, because if you take the $40 an ounce they're being given against the $90 an ounce that's the average, that's going to bring that average down. So, you know, some of these other companies might get re-rated if the deal goes through. So, but Corey, I really don't think this deal is going to go through. I mean, I really think there's going to be a bidding war, especially now that the gold price looks like it's double bottomed at 1850.
What do you think is driving this decision of Monarch and the CEO, Jean-Marc Lacoste? Both you and I talked to him. I really like having Jean-Marc on the show, but this seems almost like a premature deal, as you're even outlining.
Yeah, you know, I haven't had a chance to talk to him because they're obviously busy. But I mean, if you take a look at the CapEx, you know, it's almost $500 million, and Monarch's, basically a micro-cap company. They were going to have to at least JV it and sell at least probably half of it to get a deal. They've got all these other projects that they need to focus on, and the market was not giving a lot of love to Monarch because of that. They didn't know where their focus was. So now selling Wasamac and then being able to turn their focus to these other projects. You know, they've got the Beaufort mine, which is, they've got a 42,500 meter drill program going on there, and they're planning to put it back into production by the middle to late next year of 25,000 ounces a year. And it's only been drill tested down to about 700, 750 meters. And if you take a look at the mines in that area, the grades get higher as they go deeper. Also, they've got the Mackenzie Brake property, that exploration property that's very good, and they've got another mill, the Beacon Mill, and they've got that Kronauer project, which is permitted. So they can focus on that now with the $14 million cash. So I think the market might give some love to that SpinCo.
Oh, that's interesting. Something that we'll definitely follow along with, but. Again, as you've outlined, this is not a done deal quite yet. So let's see how this all plays through. How are you playing this in your investment? I assume from what you're saying here is that you're holding your shares. You're not rotating this money out right now.
Absolutely. No, I'm holding until this plays out. And if the deal does eventually go through, what I will most likely do is I'll sell my Yamana shares and I'll put the money into the SpinCo.
Okay, but then you need to revalue some of the other stocks and other companies in the area, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a tough balance there. All right, well, let's follow along with this deal. Hopefully there is a bidding war, and hopefully we do start seeing some more M&A because it has been very slow for the sector. Let's wrap it up with a couple quick comments on the moves in the precious metals. Gold started to move higher, quite strongly higher on Thursday. The stocks had a very good day. And I think even more importantly, GDX, as we're recording this, progressing later on in the day on Friday, GDX is above that 41 level. And quite frankly, you look at a weekly close, if it can close around this level, that'll be the highest close since mid-September, even early September, finally breaking that short-term downtrend that it's been in. How significant was that move on Thursday in your eyes?
I think it's very significant if you look at the volume also. And also if you take a look at both SIL, SILJ, the silver ETFs, as well as the GDXJ, they did not make lower lows like the GDX did. So when you see a positive divergence like that from silver miners and the juniors, well, like GDXJ is not really the juniors, it's the mid-tiers. But still, I mean, you take a look at the juniors, a lot of them made significant moves, and they're starting to show relative strength against both gold and the miners. That's a positive sign.
Where are you focusing some of your investments now then? Is it still on these exploration plays? Are you going up the pyramid? What's the sweet spot then?
Well, I sent out a report, as you know, to my subscribers last night about a company that I believe is a takeover candidate that is undervalued by the market here. So I like these companies that are close to the finance stage or at the finance stage that control high margin projects that I believe are near-term takeover candidates.
Well, Dave, we'll wrap it up there. Just a nice update on the M&A transaction that at least is proposed, and well, we'll see how the vote goes, right? And we'll see if there is a bidding war. Hopefully there is, but Either way, nice to see some M&A. Just would be better if it's at a higher value, but we can argue and complain about that all day long. Hey, Dave, great chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time on this weekend show. And hey, everyone, go check out Dave's website, Junior Miner Junkie, to learn more about his newsletter. Thanks for your time on this weekend, Dave.
Sure, Corey. Thanks a lot.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Continuing on with the second hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report and continuing to focus on the resource sector, more specifically on exploration plays, as I am chatting with Steve Totteruk. He is an investment advisor and geologist over at Sprott Global Resource Investments. Now, Steve, as I've had you on the show a number of times before, just to bring everybody up to speed, due to compliance issues, we can't discuss specific stocks that are current. We can discuss past stocks that have maybe been sold, but we can talk generally about what interests you when you're focused on exploration plays and riding discovery stories, because quite frankly, it doesn't matter what kind of market we are in. If you can find a discovery and invest in it early, you can make some very good money. Let's start off, though, with a comment on all the new listings that we're seeing coming into the market. This happens in a bull market, especially in smaller cap companies. Look, a lot's crossing my desk. I'm sure a lot is crossing your desk. What do you filter out initially, and what do you focus on when you do get some of these new listings cross your desk?
Well, like you touched on, Corey, when you get into a bull market, it's just a given you're going to get a lot of guys bringing new companies to the market. And with that, they've got to raise money. So, I see the announcement of new companies coming, you know, on the exchange and starting their new life. But all I can hope is that they spend the money wisely in the ground, trying to advance projects, make new discoveries, things like that. So I don't pay a lot of attention just because a new company starts out. I don't waste my time tearing the company apart, finding out who's running it. I just want to know there's another exploration company out there exploring, trying to make a discovery. So the more companies we have growing, the better.
What about when you're going through some of these decks and you see a lot of these companies referred to either past mining or past drill results or even past resources that aren't 43-101 compliant right now? Does anything jump out to you? Do you focus on either of these?
A new company that's just starting to trade today or recently is in all likelihood not going to have a top quality project. Those were long gone. You know, all the good properties are owned happily by current owners, and they're not going to let them go. You know, we touched on, I think, one of our previous chats about some of the big companies, you know, announcing they're going to sell some of their non-core assets, i.e. deposits or mines that are too small for them. I want to see where those land. So, you know, I am looking for, you know, the announcement one day, you know, on the chance that some little company makes a significant acquisition. But other than that, you know, I sort of refer to those old projects or old deposits as recrets. They were found 10, 20, 30 years ago, and they're still sitting in the ground for a reason. They weren't good enough.
Yeah, and when you hear the company arguing that, well, look at the current metals price compared to where it was, and that's why it'll work now, that's just all too common of simply a promotional tactic, isn't it?
I'd say so. Usually they're going to be smallish deposits, grade is mediocre, and that's not usually a good combination for a successful mining operation.
Fair enough. All right, let's talk about where money gets spent then from a lot of these junior companies. Look, a lot of these companies have raised significant amounts of money, and a lot of them are undertaking some pretty significant drill programs. That's why these labs are so backed up. But I was even mentioning to you, I was sitting during the week watching TV as I was catching up on some work at night, and I had BNN on. So that's kind of the Canadian Financial News Network. And I was noticing a lot more advertisements, commercials for these junior explorers. I knew a couple of the companies. I didn't know about some of the other ones. When I went digging into some of them, I was like, wow, these guys must be spending a lot of money on these simple TV ads. That doesn't give me a whole lot of confidence in these companies. What do you like to see between a balance of money in the ground, but some money needing to be spent towards promotion to get the story out there?
Right. Well, interesting. Sidebar here is, you know, I'm quite involved in some of the higher profile discovery plays in Australia right now, and it seems like the Australian companies spend nowhere near the amount of money on promotion that North American companies do. It's like the North Americans want to spend lots of money promoting their stock, hoping that'll push the share price up, whereas the Australians tend to want to go out and spend the money in the ground, see if they can, you know, find something positive, new material that will move the share price higher. I prefer the Australian way. It shocks me at how much money some of the North American companies spend on investor relations. You know, I want them to tell the story, but you don't need to overpromote as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, this even ties into what you've offered to a lot of my listeners is if they want to send you some of the stocks they're interested in or even their portfolios, you can give them your thoughts on those companies. And time and time again, when I get sent companies and even some of the ones that have been sent to you, we see the same names. And unfortunately, it makes me kind of sad to see so many people get sucked into these promotional plays that have been around for such a long time and really have done nothing to create shareholder value. Maybe they've grown their market cap, but the share price really has not gone anywhere. Let's actually talk about true exploration right now. When you do have a discovery hole and companies start to step out, there's a wide range of step out distances that these companies undertake. We see some 10 meter step outs, we see some 100 meter step outs. What actually makes a deposit grow in your eyes?
Well, I always sort of say that, you know, when a company drills that good discovery drill hole, it's good grade gold over, you know, good mineable widths, whether that's for an underground mine or an open pit, the game is on. They've got to, you know, be able to move the drill over and grow that into at least a 1 million ounce gold deposit to justify building a standalone expensive mining operation. So, you know, you want to find that out sooner than later or as quick as you can, because every hole you drill is costing you a lot of money. So, you know, I like to see meaningful step outs in, you know, call them vein type of gold deposits. You know, after the discovery drill hole, I want to see the drill moved over at least 25 meters and preferably 50 meters. You know, if the company's feeling really strong or they've got some good solid information that they've got lots of confidence, move the drill over 100 meters on step outs. You know, trying to find the ultimate size of the footprint as quick as you can. And then if it looks like you got that 1 million ounces or 2 million ounces, you know, come back and then start to infill or tighten up type of thing. But 10 meter step outs to me is a waste of money.
Yeah, those are more market holes, aren't they? Companies like to promote on the back of those, but they're not doing anything to truly show the scale of the deposit. When you're comparing step-out holes to the initial discovery hole, I know this is hard to answer because every hole is different, but what matters most to you?
I guess the main thing is that the system is still alive. You know, very few deposits are uniform in shape or size. A lot of them, especially vein type of deposits, are almost always going to pinch and swell. So I like to see, you know, even if the discovery drill hole is a good, wide, respectable drill hole, you know, further holes drilled down the road might, you know, pinch or narrow down quite a bit. But as long as it's still a little bit there and it's got decent grade, you know, that's fine. You don't need to hit on 100% of your drill holes. I think if you hit on 60 to 70%, at the end of the day, you should have a good deposit.
Yeah, and it's all about just figuring out the size and the scale of the underlying deposit, right? And when it comes to an actual deposit that you think is workable, either from a mining perspective or saleable to a bigger company, is there a general threshold that you have?
Well, like I said, you got to have at least 1 million ounces of gold. That would be a small gold mine in my books. Like there's smaller mines that are, you know, mining 50,000 ounces of gold or 25,000 ounces of gold. Those usually aren't over 1 million ounce deposits. They're certainly not multi-million ounce deposits. So the first threshold is let's get to 1 million ounces. And hopefully at that point, it's still wide open. So you can grow up to 2 million, 3 million. And, you know, ultimately, you know, plus 5 million ounces for the big home run. But you got to get at least to 1 million ounces.
All right. Well, Steve, we're going to wrap it up there. But again, Steve is offering to take a look at any of your portfolios, give you his thoughts on any of the companies you are wondering about investing in or that you're already invested in. You can send Steve an email direct to sdotteruk@sprottglobal.com. I will also post his email in that Hour 2 weekend show posting. Or you can send your questions and those companies to me, fleck@kereport.com. And I can pass those on to Steve. Steve, it's great having you on the show. Thanks again for taking some time on this weekend.
Thanks, Corey. Have a good weekend.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report and wrapping up this 2-hour weekend show with a company update from Nucor Gold, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NCAU and on the OTC markets under the symbol PRCNF. I'm chatting with the president and CEO, Luke Alexander. Now, Luke, I wanted to highlight some of the news that has just recently come out of Nucor Gold from this week, because it's a pretty significant increase in the company's drill program. Just to bring everybody up to speed, I first introduced Nucor on the show back at the tail end of September. The company is focused in Ghana on this Enchi Gold property. There is already a resource that was updated already this year, stands at 1.22 million ounces. And the news from November 5th outlined a 50,000 meter increase in the drill program on top of the already 8,000 meters that was underway. So a massive step from 8,000 now to 58,000. Luke, just give us an initial comment on what's drawing the company to increase the drill program by this much.
Yeah, hi, Corey, and hi everyone who's listening in. I hope you're having a good weekend. We're ultimately really excited about the additional 50,000 meters that we're going to drill. You know, historically, there's been about 49,000 meters drilled on this project. And, you know, needless to say, this is a very large program. And ultimately, I mean, the district scale potential that we've got at our Enchi project justifies this kind of a program. So we're going to focus on ultimately expanding resource as well as, for the first time ever, drilling at depth. So that's the main motivation for the money that we just raised, is to be able to aggressively drill this program over the next 6 months.
So for everyone who is listening in their car or simply on the radio or through our podcast, I recommend going to the Nucor Gold website. It's nucorgold.com. Pulling up the company's slide presentation and going to slide 13. This outlines the overall project and all of the targets that the company has. I believe it's upwards of 25 targets. There's also a pyramid here that shows target ranking in terms of where deposits are, what you're hoping to at least increase some of these deposits in the overall resource, and some of the untested targets. Let's start with the top of the pyramid here. So some of the low-hanging fruit that could grow the current 1.22 million ounce resource. Take us through some of these targets first, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you look at the map on slide 13, you'll see that our property is 216 square kilometers from north to south. It's about 40 kilometers in length, and where the mineralization typically sits on these types of deposits are second and third order shears that come off of the main Bibiani shear. If you total up those second and third order shears or splays that go through our property, you've got about 100 kilometers of strike length, so true district scale potential. We've to date identified about 25 different targets across the entire property. They're at various stages of work. So at the top of the pyramid, which Corey's referring to on slide 13, we've got Boeing, Suam, and Niam. Those are our three resource areas. That's what makes up our 1.22 million ounces of inferred resource. And those areas are open along strike. At Boeing and Suam, there's some gap zones, which, again, if you're looking at the presentation, you'll see those gap areas on slide 14. But ultimately, those are areas that have not been historically drilled. So as part of this 50,000 meters and part of the 8,000 meters that we're just finishing up at the moment, we've started to drill out those areas, and we think that that's lower risk, lower hanging fruit potential to expand the resource, as well as drilling along strike at all three of these resource areas. And then the big opportunity is for the first time ever to start drilling at depth. And if you look at these green stone hosted deposits, typically where they significantly grow is when you start drilling at depth. And if you look at Chirano, 50 kilometers to the north of us, that's Kinross's 200,000 ounce a year producer, five and a half million ounce deposit. You'll see that at depth, they significantly started to grow their resource. And that's one of the things we're extremely excited about is to, for the first time ever, to start drilling at depth on Boeing, Suam, and Niam. And we think that we could significantly grow the resource. Again, if you're looking at slide 15 in our presentation, you'll see that there's a cross section there comparing Enchi to Chirano, and you can visually see how these deposits can have real potential to grow at depth. So that's the focus for resource expansion. But then there's other areas that we've had some historical drilling done on, very limited drilling, areas like Kojina Hill, Quackrom, and Arati, and we're currently going back to two of those areas, Kojina Hill and Quackrom, as part of our 8,000 meter program. But ultimately, we'll look to do a lot more drilling with the 50,000 meters that we've that we're going to do over the next 6 months, and we'll ultimately look to move those drill tested areas up the pyramid and hopefully into the resource category. And then the next area of focus will be some of the advanced targets that we've got on our property. So areas like Nkwanta, Suam South. Suam South is one of the largest anomalies on our property. It's 3.5 kilometers by 2.5 kilometers. It sits at the southern end of our property. We've currently just built a road down to Suam South. We're going to start doing trenching work, and we'll ultimately start to drill that for the first time ever early next year, as well as Arati, which 40 kilometers to the north is another area where we're going to go back and do some additional drilling. And then below that, we've got, you know, another, call it 15 to 20 different targets at various stages, where we'll either be doing trenching or soil sampling, mapping, to kind of start to move those towards the advanced target area. So lots of opportunity across this project for us, and we're really excited about the next 6 months.
Okay, quick follow-up question regarding some of the deep drilling. How deep are you planning on going with these holes?
So to date, the average depth that's been drilled across our property is 50 meters. So historically, it's really been targeting the oxides. The deepest hole that we've drilled is down to 175 meters vertical. With this upcoming program and with the diamond rigs that we'll bring in, we'll look to drill down to kind of 250 to 350 meters vertical.
Now, what about all these other targets? I get it. You guys have a wealth of targets here. It's not a bad thing to have this many targets, but to balance out how many holes you're putting into each of these targets, can you give us a little insight here?
So at the moment, we've got one rig on site. That's we'll keep that rig on site, and it's just kind of finishing up and pushing through the 8,000 meters. So we'll keep that drill rig turning. We'll look to add two more drill rigs by the end of this year, and then early next year look to bring in another two or three rigs. So by early next year, we'll ramp up to call it five or six rigs, and we'll look to have all of this drilling done, the 50,000 meters, by May of next year, which is when the rainy season starts. So in terms of the targeting, about half of it will be focused on RC drilling, so continuing to expand the oxide resource with a big focus at Boeing, Suam, and Niam, which are our resource areas. But then again, bringing areas like Kojina Hill, Quackram, Arati, hopefully into that resource category as well. And then with the diamond drilling, the other kind of half of our program, we'll start to drill at depth. The areas that we'll focus on for the deeper drilling are Boeing and Suam and Niam initially. And again, we've got the best geological understanding of those areas given the amount of drilling that's been done on them already. So that's where we'll focus our deep drilling. And then obviously, targeting other areas for the first time as well, as I've highlighted areas like Suam South, Tokasia, Nkwanta. And then we've got a portion of the meters that are unallocated, and those will ultimately move around depending on how things are progressing and some of the work that are being done on additional targets across the overall property.
Okay, so there is a nice balance here of growing resources, current resources, but then also going to make some potentially new discoveries in terms of areas that haven't even been drilled before and areas that do have some work already done on them. Is that fair to say that the overall goal right here at the end of this 58,000 meter program is to increase resources, but also make potentially a couple new discoveries?
Absolutely. And that's where we think we can create the most value for shareholders, is continue to, prove up resource, oxide resource near surface, ultimately grow from the current 1.22 million ounces that we've got. But then, make new discoveries is a big goal for us as part of this 50,000 meter program. And hence the reason why we're spreading out and drilling a number of different targets, but also hoping to make some discoveries at depth, which we think will start to prove out that this system has real potential to grow at depth, and we think that'll create a lot of value for shareholders. So absolutely, grow the resource and make new discoveries is the goal of this program. And if you look at it, the historical drilling that's been done on this, we're almost doubling the total RC, and actually we're more than doubling the total RC and diamond drilling that's been done on this project with this 50,000, or call it 58,000 meter program that we're that we're doing at the moment.
So Luke, when people are starting to see some of the results hit the market, should investors be expecting any higher grade zones, or is this really a property where you see a consistent grade throughout, or at least that potential, just building resources that are all of similar material, similar grade?
If you look at some of the other deposits along the Sefwi Bibiani belt, you'll see that where grades have typically increased is at depth. And again, if you look at Chirano to the north of us, that's where they started to make higher grade discoveries, was when they started to drill deeper. And again, if your listeners are looking at our presentation, I'd point them to slide 15, and that kind of highlights the potential for higher grade at depth. But from an oxide perspective, at surface, the opportunity to continue to expand that and have very economic ounces is something that we're going to really focus on as well. But yes, at depth, our expectation is that we will see higher grades.
All right. Now, I guess another thing that we do need to touch on is the funding of the company. The company just closed a $15 million bought deal. How much is budgeted for this 58,000 meter program?
So the 8,000 meters was funded from the money that we raised in May of this year. And then our goal is ultimately to put as many meters into the ground as possible. I mean, one of the things with Nucor is that management is extremely well aligned with shareholders. We've through our 32% ownership in the business. So ultimately, our goal is aligned with shareholders, that we ultimately want to put as much money into the ground as possible. And so that's the way we've laid out our budget is, you know, how many meters can we get to ultimately maximize value for shareholders. And that's where we were able to come up with that 50,000 meter program. But then, you know, when we finish that program, we ultimately also want to make sure we've got enough cash in the bank to weather any storms and be able to run the business for a 12 or 18 month period post completion of that drilling. So we're putting as many dollars into the ground as possible because we think that's where we'll be able to maximize shareholder value ultimately.
All right, Luke, we're going to wrap it up here. That wraps up this two-hour weekend show. Please, everybody, send me your thoughts, first of all, on the new, more focused format on investing and, well, resources for the second hour. Also, send me any questions you have for any of the guests that I've had on, and especially for Luke over at Nucor. I will get all those answered, as I'll just keep up all the daily editorials and the two-hour weekend show as we progress through the rest of this year, which undoubtedly will continue to be volatile, but it was a good week, end of the week, especially for precious metals, and I know a lot of investors saw some nice gains just this week. So hey, everybody, thank you for tuning in this weekend. As I mentioned, keep those emails coming, fleck@kereport.com. Luke, everybody else, have a great weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.